National Radio Club.
And since we had that flight down to Texas, I'm going to sit here in the lounge and just kind of take it easy. But I want to tell you a little bit about the National Radio Club Convention, which is coming up over Labor Day weekend. The National Radio Club Convention is going to be held in Culpsville, Pennsylvania this year. The location is the Best Western, which is located at 1750 Sumney Town Pike in Culpsville, Pennsylvania, 19443. Now, Culpsville is a suburb of Lansdale, and Philadelphia is just to the southeast. The hotel's telephone number is area code 215-368-3800. You can also call 1-800-277-3615 for reservations only. Rooms are $75 per night. Be sure to mention the National Radio Club to get this rate. Room sharing is limited to 4 persons per room. Registration is $45 for convention and banquet, $35 for your significant other, $20 for the convention only if you're not going to partake in the dinner, and $10 for your significant other. Here's what's going on at the convention. Friday, registration starts at 9 a.m. Friday evening, an illustrated tour of AM radio in Tampa Bay, Florida, including an explanation from John Bowker about what does Tampa Bay mean? On Saturday morning, a tour of Philadelphia radio stations WFIL 560 and WNTP 990. Carpools will be arranged, by the way. Saturday afternoon, a display of radio newspapers and magazines from the 1920s and 1930s. Complete lists of radio stations from the early 20s up to present day for your review. Saturday evening, the annual National Radio Club DX Audio Service meeting and auction of valued treasures. Sunday morning, it's the wake-up quiz, and you can win all sorts of candies for yelling out correct answers to important radio station trivia. The dress rehearsal for the DX Audio Service's October issue, the travelogue featuring stations operating at 9:30 on the AM dial, will take place. And it's the annual official National Radio Club examination with a free one-year membership going to the winner. Now, Sunday afternoon is going to be great because Dave Marthouse, DX Audio Service member, will entertain us with stories about how small market AM radio stations can not only exist, but they can also thrive. Imagine that. Sunday evening, the annual banquet, right in the meeting hotel. Guest speaker will be Dave McCork. He's the operator of internet radio station WNAR-AM, along with a Part 15 station located in nearby Lansdale. Monday, it's going to be the departure with a promise to reassemble next year. Now, please note, a special program for the ladies is in the works and will be announced as soon as possible. Additional program activities are always added a week or two before the convention, so it should promise to be a very fun time. If you have any questions or need some information, contact the host for the convention, and you can also mail your auction items to him. His name is Dave Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, Post Office Box 3111, Scranton, Pennsylvania, 18505-0111. Or you can write to him via email at nrcmusings@aol.com.
Here is the preliminary information for the 2005 NFL season. Baltimore, 1300 WJFK and 102.7 WQSR in a network with Scott Garceau and Tom Eddy. Buffalo Bills, 96.9 WGRF and 28 affiliates with John Murphy and Alex Van Pelt. Cincinnati Bengals, 1360 WCKY and 92.5 WOFX and 25 affiliates with Brad Johansson and Dave Laffam. For the 35th year, the Denver Broncos on 850 KOA and a network with Dave Logan and Scott Hastings. Spanish broadcast, 1280 KBNO, Milo Sanchez and Saul Sanz. Cleveland Browns, 100.7 WMMS and television WOIO. San Diego, the only thing I know is 105.3 KIOZ and also mentioned was KFMB-TV. Miami Dolphins, 790 Waxy, WXY, and WFOR-TV. New England Patriots, 104.1 WBCN in Boston. I know they're based in Foxborough, and they have 33 affiliates with Gil Santos and Gino Capoletti. The New York Jets, 770 WEPN, says simulcast, I don't know why, 1050 WEPN, and television channel 2 WCBS. Pittsburgh, 102.5 WDVE and 970 WBGG and 34 affiliates with Bill Hillgrove, Myron Copen, Tunch Ilkin, and KDKA-TV2. Houston, Texans, 610 and 100.3 KILT and 40 affiliates. Mark Vandermeer and Andre Ware there. Indianapolis, 1260 WNDE and 94.7 WNDE with Bob Lamy. Jacksonville, 690 WOKV and 96.9 WKQL and a network with Brian Sexton and Jeff Lagerman. Channel 47 WTEV will do the broadcast. Telecast, that is. Nashville, Tennessee, Titans, 103.3 WKDF and 80 affiliates with Mike Keith and Pat Ryan. Kansas City Chiefs, 101.1 KCFX in Harrisonville, Missouri. Oakland, 560 KSFO. And all I read is internet broadcasts with Chris Gargano and Jerry Neck. Next to the NFC, Dallas Cowboys, 98.7 KLUV. The New York Giants, 660 WFAN and 17 stations. Television is WNBC-TV. Philadelphia, 94.1 WYSP and 10 stations with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. Washington Redskins, 106.7 WJFK and 27 affiliates. TV Channel 9 WSA. Chicago Bears, well, I'm in their area, but they don't tell me a whole lot, or I don't pay much attention. 780 WBBM with Tom Thayer and somebody else think Jeff Joniak is gone. And Channel 5 WMAQ-TV. Detroit Lions 97.1 WKRK and a network with Dan Miller and another play-by-play. Green Bay Packers in Milwaukee, 620 WTMJ and Green Bay 1400 WDUZ, Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron. Minnesota Vikings 1130 KFAN and a network. Atlanta Falcons 92.9 WZGC, called Dave FM, by the way. West Durham, Chuck Smith and Dave Archer there. Charlotte, Carolina Panthers, 1110 and 99.3 WBT and 43 affiliates with Mick Mixon, Gene Robinson, and Jim Zoke. Television, WCCB, Fox TV in Charlotte. New Orleans Saints, 870 WWL and 32 affiliates with Jim Henderson and Hokie Gajan. Spanish, 830 WFNO. Television, Channel 54 WUPL. Tampa Bay, all I read, 620 WDAE and 103.5 WFUS. Phoenix, Arizona Cards, 620 KTAR, conflict with the Diamondbacks, 860 KMVP. St. Louis Rams, 103.3 KLOU, and also on 550 KTRS. San Francisco 49ers, it's weird. They call it 680 and 1050 KNBR simulcast, although that's not right since 1050 is KTZT. Oh well. And 107.7 KSAN called the bone. And finally, Seattle 710 KIRO. In 30 days, I should have better information. Take care, friends. Good DX.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the action line.
Hello, everybody in DX Audio Service. This is John German, Elmer Heights. I thought I'd let everybody know I was picking up a CHWL 740, as I usually do on from Canada. And for some reason, around 8 o'clock, around 9 o'clock at night, once in a while, I pick up another 740 station. And it sounds to me like it may be out of Pennsylvania or out of Delaware or somewhere like that. I'm not sure.
Hi there. This is Don Finney in Miami, Florida. This was taken on July 11th on Monday. Are there any radio stations in the complete history of radio that have been stronger than, for example, WLW in Cincinnati from about 1934 to 1939, stronger than 500,000 watts?
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Bradford, Ontario. Well, a friend of mine died a couple of weeks ago. He's been in the radio business up here quite a long time. He's only 54 years old. Mark LaPointe, he was an 820 champ in Hamilton and then BX93 FM country station in London. The Chicago White Sox are going from 1,000 ESPN next year to the score 670, so that'll be quite a move. C. Crane Company is coming out with a new radio in the fall, I understand. I picked up a station in Richmond, Virginia last Thursday night on 950, and they were doing the Richmond Braves. This was just before it got dark, around 9 o'clock at night, and I had Spanish on 940 a couple of nights. I've also been getting Houston, Mississippi some nights, WCPC, 50,000 watts coming up here and blowing Montreal right off the air. And I picked up a station over the weekend on 1650, just coming up in the Waterloo, Iowa area, Cedar Rapids, that area. They're moving from 1250. They're a sports station. They carry some from ESPN, some from Fox, and also from CBS News. Radio Shack up here now is calling themselves The Source. Circuit City took it over, but apparently that's what they're calling it up here now. Picked up a station in Pittsburgh, WPTT, on 1360, and they were carrying some ESPN programming. I noticed the station on 1250 is still carrying that, so somebody must be going to make a change there. Also, Bob Durant, who was a veteran of news and commentary on several radio stations in the Toronto area, just left CHWO 740 in Oakville very recently, and he's getting to where he may be at retirement age, and I don't know if he's going to retire now or if he'll be seeking a job somewhere else. But he's interviewed a lot of very important people in his time for those stations in that area.
Okay, hi, my name is John Sinners. I'm located in Diamonddale, Michigan. I have a question. Okay, I'm planning on attending this year's National Radio Club Convention. I'm totally blind. Would someone be willing to actually meet me at the site where we are going to be having it? Because it's going to be hard for me to try to get around. If someone would be interested in doing that, you can give me a call at 1-517-646-7075. Or you can give me a call on my cell phone, please, after 7 o'clock at 1-517-775-2478. If you have time on the weekends, same number, 73s, and good DX. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, this is George Washington from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I am a subscriber for the DX Audio Service. I really enjoy it. I was down in Missouri over the weekend, not over the over this weekend, but over the 4th of July weekend, and I got a lot of interesting stations down there in Missouri. I was down in Salem, Missouri. And anyway, in St. Louis, I found out that KFUO 850 has IVOC on it, unfortunately. Okay, this is George again. I'm going to give you my phone number one more time. It's 414-461-9710. That's my number. If anybody to call me in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they want to leave me a message here and stuff or talk to me.
Give us your thoughts about what's happening in your area. Keep your ears open. When you hear something that's important for everyone to know, call us.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Remember, if you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today on the Action Line. The number is simply 360-469-0189, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. Hey, did you comment on the matter of digital broadcasting in the broadcast band? That is IBOC. Well, 879 people did, and some were National Radio Club members, I'm happy to say. I noticed a couple of interesting things about the comments. First, some folks in the club who have been talking about the interference issues were strangely silent. Now that surprised me, given their passion about the interference issues and how it's impacting their hobby and also their ability just to listen to radio. Second was that the majority of people who liked the idea of digital broadcasting in the AM band supported it on financial gain issues and what they perceived that they would get. For example, one commenter said that they're looking forward to digital as it would help the blind with additional radio reading services. Now, I should note that I know of no initiative to increase radio reading services. In fact, if stations are not doing a radio reading service, I know of no reason why they would do one after converting to digital. Now, on the other side of the coin, let's look at the opposition. I noticed a lot of comments that spoke of the technical issues, the interference, the impacts to the EAS, public safety, and even to the public service aspect. It's very interesting reading all those comments and getting to know people through their thoughts. And again, I'd like to thank those of you who did take the time just to pen a sentence or even a paragraph, pro or con, because it was your voice that will decide what many of us will have for radio in the years to come. Hey, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. Bill Dvorak sent me an email letting me know about the Madison-Milwaukee get-together. He writes that the 12th annual Madison-Milwaukee get-together for DXers and radio enthusiasts will be held on Saturday, August 20th in Burroughs Park, and that's in Madison, Wisconsin. It's going to be along beautiful Lake Mendota. This year's hosts are National Radio Club members Bill and Nina Dvorak. Activities will begin at 1 p.m., move on to dinner at 6 p.m., and end with a nightly session at Bill and Nina's. You can join them for the whole day or just part of the day. Come when you can and leave when you must. Well, what can you expect with this event? Well, good fellowship and lots of DX talk in an informal atmosphere. They say they'll provide the shelter, snacks, and soda. So all you need to bring is your love of and enthusiasm for the DX hobby and a little fellowship. They promise that you'll have fun, exchange some great ideas, make some new friendships, and renew some old ones. Now, if you'd like to get more information about this, contact Bill Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K, by any of these three methods. First, email. His address is dxerak@aol.com. And be sure to put the words DX Get Together in the subject line. Or you can send him mail at 501 Algoma, that's A-L-G-O-M-A Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53704-4812. Or you can give Bill a call, or Nina a call at area 605. I didn't mean to leave you off, Nina. All right, by calling area code 608-244-5497. For planning purposes, please let them know that you're coming. In each of the last 2 years, 29 DXers attended the event, and they expect similar numbers this year. This is a all-band event and draws a diverse group of hobbyists. So, we hope that you can come and look forward to meeting you. And that's from Bill and Nina Dvorak. Now let's take a look at Page Watch. If you like geeky kind of things, surplus radios and odd things that are hard to find, then you'd probably love living in my hometown here of Lima, Ohio, because we have a store that, it's been around as long as I can remember. I remember getting my first catalog for this place probably about 4 years before I learned how to drive. And this is one of those places where when I'm on the amateur radio repeater, there's probably one person a week that comes through town and asks on the repeater, "Hey, where is Fair Radio?" Fair Radio is right here in Lima, Ohio, and I just happened to get some information about some things that they have that it's not really printed, so I guess we're kind of violating our Page Watch charter here, but I thought I'd pass these items on to you because they're kind of good deals compared to what you've been hearing on the radio about these items. First of all, the AM antenna by Sea Crane Radio with twin coil ferrite. It's the biggest advancement in AM radio design in over 50 years. The best compact AM antenna for portable radio or home stereo.
It increases the availability of daytime stations and also helps to cut out some of the nighttime fade. The tuner size is 3.3 wide by 4.3 high and 1.3 deep. Antenna head size is 8.5 wide by 2.5 high and 1.3 deep. 30-day money-back guarantee. It's brand new. It's model number TCA, and they have it for $99.95. The Justice AM Antenna Remote Kit. If your radio isn't near a window, or if you find that AM radio reception is better outside than inside, a Justice AM Radio Antenna Remote Kit might solve the problem. Now, when using the remote kit, you can set the antenna element closer to a window or even outside, away from the noise and the interference. You'll dramatically improve the reception of weak AM stations in brick, stucco, or metal-sided homes and can virtually eliminate static. 30-day money-back guarantee. A 25-foot remote installation kit is part number J-25. It's new and $19.95. A 50-foot remote installation kit is part number J-50. It's new and it goes for $29.95. Finally, the FM Reflect by Sea Crane Radios is an affordable FM antenna that is better or to be better than the average best indoor antenna made. Great signal-to-noise ratio, works with any portable or stereo receiver, incorporates a new dipole design for a maximum gain across the FM band. Up to 213% more powerful than a standard dipole antenna and comes with a F connector, balanced spade connector, and an alligator clip. The size? Well, the element is 54 inches with an 8-inch feed line. The weight is 2 pounds, and it has a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's part number FMW. It's brand new and $24.95. And if you'd like to contact the folks over at Fair Radio, if you have more questions about this or maybe you want to order one, you can give them a call at area code 419-227-6573 or 419-223-2196. And if you'd like to write to them, it's Fair Radio, and the address is 2395 St. John's Road, or Post Office Box 1105, Lima, Ohio 45802. And we hope that helps you out if you're looking for something to improve your AM or FM reception. If you do contact them, be sure to tell them that you heard about this on the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. And hopefully we'll find some more deals like this in the near future. In fact, I think I'm going to go over here in the next couple days and get one of those antennas. If you follow sports on the radio, you might enjoy this little tidbit, but I kind of screwed up here, and I forgot to write down the name of the member who sent this to me. Please excuse me for that. But Boston's due to get another sports talk station in mid-July. WEEI may be looking over its shoulder a bit, but the new ESPN-based rival is not quite there yet. But Walter Sutton closed on its $9 million pickup of WAMG Dedham on 890 and WLLH in Lowell on 1400 from Mega Communications and is temporarily keeping them in their Spanish tropical format. So look for some new sports talk happening in Boston. And if you were the one that sent that to me, I apologize profusely for not writing down your name.
Well, Fred, this is going to be a fascinating subject to follow because, as you remember well, 2 years ago, the FCC came out with this expanded ownership regulation, meaning that newspapers and radio and television could all be co-owned. And there was argument publicly about whether or not this would limit the freedom of voice in any community. Well, I'll not go on. Let me quote from a newsletter published by the highly regarded Pike and Fisher Company in Silver Spring, Maryland. They have six times a year this newsletter comes out. It's called the Broadcast Rules Service. And in the May-June 2005 edition, they have a headline called Supreme Court Declines to Review Appeal of FCC's Media Ownership Rules. This is pretty complicated stuff, but bear with me. I think you'll find it interesting. The Supreme Court declined on June 13th to consider appeals filed by several media companies and their trade associations to preserve the Federal Communications Commission's new media ownership rules that they had adopted in June 2003, which leaves the commission either to rewrite or better justify the controversial rules that were brought up in a legal case of the FCC versus Prometheus Radio Project. Now, this has been one of the FCC's most controversial recent decisions. The 2003 order expanding multiple broadcast owners' allowable share of the market generated millions of postcards and comments. A year later, in June 2004, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit overturned the new rules and issued a stay until the agency rewrote or legally justified them. Well, several media interests immediately appealed to the Supreme Court to reverse the Third Circuit, including Media General, the National Association of Broadcasters, the Newspaper Association of America, Sinclair Broadcast Group, and the Tribune Company. The Supreme Court denied all petitions on June 13th of this year. Well, the FCC filed a cross-motion supporting the efforts of the industry groups involved. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin issued a short statement in response to the court's ruling in which he said, "I am now looking forward to working with all of my colleagues as we reevaluate our media ownership rules consistent with the Third Circuit's guidance of our statutory obligations." Well, the battle isn't over by any means. FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, a Democrat, he had voted against the new rules in 2003, and he welcomed the court's decision. In a statement, Copps said the move would spur the commission to adopt new rules more in line with the expectations of the public. "The ball is clearly back in the commission's court," Copps said. "The FCC has a fresh opportunity now to come up with a set of rules that will encourage localism, competition, and diversity in our media. If we work together, conduct outreach to engage the American people, and gather a more complete record, I'm confident of our ability to craft rules that will withstand judicial scrutiny and the scrutiny of the American public. I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and work with my colleagues to get that job done." Well, Senator Byron Dorgan, a Democrat of North Dakota, said he welcomed the decision as well. In the 108th Congress, Dorgan had led a successful effort in the Senate to block the new ownership rules from taking effect, but the House failed to follow suit. Dorgan said the rules as drafted by the FCC were a complete cave-in to special interests. They would have allowed a dangerous concentration of radio, television, and newspapers. He went on to say the Supreme Court, in effect, by refusing to review the lower court's ruling, has overturned the FCC's rules. Now the FCC is going to have to go back to the drawing board and do something that represents the public interest rather than the corporate interest, Dorgan said. Gene Kimmelman, a senior director of public policy at Consumers Union, appeared suspicious of the FCC. "In the past, consumer advocates have noted that the court remanded the rules back to the same commission that adopted them in the first place." Kimmelman said, "While this decision is good news for consumers, the battle over media ownership is far from over. We must remain vigilant to ensure efforts to allow a few companies to dominate the major sources of local news and information don't succeed. We are extremely hopeful that the new FCC chairman will revisit these issues with a better understanding of how important a diverse and independent local media is to a community." That's a statement by Gene Kimmelman of Consumers Union. FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein, who also voted against the rules in 2003, said he wanted the commission to work on a bipartisan basis to bring the rules into compliance with the court's order. He said, "Learning from the backlash against the rules last time, we now need to involve the public and the Congress more fully in our deliberations. We need to hold public hearings across the country and call for more studies from experts and academics." The lead plaintiff in the case, that's the Prometheus Radio Project, in a statement, hailed the Supreme Court's decision as one more victory in the ongoing struggle to diversify and democratize the newspaper, radio, and television industries. They said, "By refusing to hear the corporation's appeal, the Supreme Court is affirming the demands of millions of people in the United States. The FCC needs to take a close look at its rules about media ownership and the assumptions guiding those rules," said Peter Tridish, an organizer of the project for Prometheus. The FCC chose a course that would add a few percentage points to the profit margins of a handful of corporations, he said. "That would expose Americans to throttled public debate." Under the FCC's rules, just a handful of corporate executives could easily stifle unpopular opinions, Tradish said. John Sturm, president and chief executive officer of the Newspaper Association of America, NAA, said that while the association was disappointed, it would continue to press its case at the FCC. The sole interest of the NAA, he said, is the current ban on newspaper broadcast cross-ownership. We're now looking forward to an FCC proceeding, which we hope will start soon, and that will start assembling comments, information, and a record on how to deal with the Third Circuit's remand. The Third Circuit stayed the new media ownership rules from going into effect, but at the same time, the court agreed with the FCC in its repeal of the 30-year-old cross-ownership ban, Mr. Sturm said. The court agreed that the repeal of the ban was legitimate, but then they went on, in the next breath, to disagree with the FCC's new cross-ownership rules and sent those back for reformulation. The stay, which remains in effect, essentially binds the newspaper industry to a 30-year-old ban that the FCC and the court have agreed can go away. But we don't have any new rules, Sturm went on, so we look forward to participating in the commission's deliberation of some new standard here, because clearly there's no logical or legal reason for the ban. And the court agreed with that, Mr. Sturm added. The Tribune Company, which currently owns newspapers and television stations, released a statement regarding the ruling. The issue of cross-ownership of newspapers and television stations in the same market is now once again before the FCC, which has a statutory obligation to deal with it in a timely manner, the Tribune wrote, adding, we are confident that cross-ownership relief will occur for two reasons, the FCC's prior decision to loosen the cross-ownership ban in major markets, and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals affirmation of that element of the Commission's rulemaking. It is our firm belief that our readers, viewers, and listeners, and the media industry, will be well served by swift resolution of this issue, the Tribune Company concluded. Well, Fred, maybe there is still some hope for localism in broadcasting. This is John Bowker for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, John. And I'm sorry to say that I forgot this email that I received for the Musings to the Members, which was supposed to be on with that segment, so I'd like to read it right now. John Milia of Exton, Pennsylvania wrote, he says, I have a question. In Philadelphia, we have a radio station at 95.7 whose call letters are WBEN, and in Buffalo on 930, we also have a WBEN. How is that possible? Well, John, the answer to that is that it is possible, legally, if the second call sign which is issued has permission from the first call sign. That is, let's just say, for example, WABC in New York on 770, somebody wanted to have a WABC FM someplace. Well, they could, as long as the parent company who owns WABC would allow those call letters to happen on the FM dial. So sometimes you see that pop up. Now, that's not to say that it's the same case as WMCA New York 570 and WMCA 970 out of Hackensack. I think what that is more or less branding by the ownership of the stations just to kind of make it sound like there's WMCA on 570 and also 970. But anyway, for the AM and FM transition, it is legal as long as there is an agreement.
Two broadcasters in Cincinnati, Ohio, say their city deserves more credit for its pioneering work in radio.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Mike.
To say that Mark Magistrelli and Mike Martini are old-time radio buffs is an understatement. Their weekly program, The Big Broadcast, on NPR member station WVXU in Cincinnati, is all about the golden age of radio. And they've spent years collecting old recordings and other memorabilia to prove their point.
The Cincinnati contribution to broadcasting really has not been told.
Magistrelli and Martini are telling it now in a new collector's edition album. The package contains two CDs of painstakingly restored old-time radio material narrated by Leonard Maltin, along with an illustrated booklet and a promotional pamphlet from the period. The album is called Cincinnati Radio, The Nation's Station, 1921 to 1941. The station is WLW, which for several years in the 1930s had the most powerful radio signal in the world, pushed by a 500,000-watt transmitter.
During the 30s, soap operas largely came out of Chicago. Many of your big network shows came out of New York. But before the cable line was established to Los Angeles, Hollywood, Cincinnati was the third largest provider of radio network shows in America. So obviously you have that Midwestern sensibility being transmitted across the nation.
Mike Martini says the history of WLW is largely the story of Cincinnati businessman Powell Crosley Jr.
Powell Crosley was a local entrepreneur who had a son who came up to him one day and said, I'd like to have a radio. And back around 1920-21, radios were about $80 or $90. So Powell decided to purchase a book called The ABCs of Radio and noticed that he could actually build a radio himself for maybe $10, $20. So he did so and thought to himself, if I could do this, why can't I sell these radios?
He was actually really the first one to get into mass production of radios on a large scale. Prior to Crosley getting into the business, they were still very much handmade, expensive items. And within, Mike, what was it, a year, 2 years, he had the largest radio manufacturing company in the world.
So he went from making radios to having a radio station and making programming.
The radios that he sold were generally the cheaper, less powerful kind, so to compensate, he had to have a radio station that was as powerful as he could possibly make it. And that gave birth to WLW and then what became the world's most powerful radio station.
WLW, the nation station of the Crosley Radio Corporation, Cincinnati.
And a lot of power attracts a lot of talent.
Oh, absolutely. This was during the Depression when things were tight all around. Fats Waller's manager was able to bring Fats to Cincinnati. When he came to Cincinnati in 1932, it was largely because with WLW signal, his manager knew that Fats could be heard over a wide section of the country. And as a result of Fats' experience on WLW, he really learned how to work to an unseen audience.
I'm the world's most happy creature. Tell me what can I be? I'm dancing, bop, bop,
we had the Mills Brothers.
Crisco, the all-vegetable shortening, which digests so easily, presents the Mills Brothers, singing their famous theme song, Goodbye Blues. There's no tuba, saxophone, trumpet, or trombone. The only instrument used is a guitar. All effects are achieved vocally.
They were here between 1928 and into 1931. And so when they left and had almost immediate success in New York, the Ink Spots were the next up-and-coming group that WLW helped develop. WLW had this incredible pioneering role, not just in the pop music field, where they were bringing along people such as Doris Day and Eddie Albert, but then later on, they got very heavily into the very fledgling country music field and just had this incredibly dominant role there as well.
Yeah, you had national stars and then locals who made good. You were pulling in a lot of talent from Kentucky, and Merle Travis and Red Foley, for example.
I was born at Renfro Valley. But I drifted far away.
You had music programs, of course, quiz shows, game shows, but the most fun listening to these discs is the drama.
The Life of Mary Southern.
You'd better hurry and get dressed.
Well, don't you want your husband to look nice tonight at that big dinner?
Oh, of course I do. Max, yeah? Did you find out anything more about Danny?
No, only that he's a young fool.
WLW could rightly lay claim to actually founding radio drama because the very first radio play written specifically for the medium was done for WLW back in 1923, and certainly the dramas at this time now to us sound rather dated, but during the early and mid-30s, this was cutting-edge radio.
And of course, I have to bring up Red Barber here.
Absolutely. Red, of course, got his big start here, I guess. He was on the radio in Florida, but he had come up to Cincinnati a few times to audition, and when Powell Crosley purchased the Reds, they needed a sports announcer, and they remembered that Red could do baseball, and so they brought him up, and Red cut his teeth doing professional ball right here in Cincinnati at Crosley Field.
He climbs into the batter's box, set to go. The count is one ball and two strikes. It's two away. Goodman has his lead off third. Allen goes around with his arm, pitches. Lombardi swings, grounder towards Joe Cronin. Joe comes up with it. The long throw to Lou Gehrig, who pulls it out of the dirt, and Lombardi is out. There was no run. No hits.
You know, I can hear Reds games in the summer on WLW today, which is 50,000 watts clear channel. I can imagine when it was 500,000, you could hear it in Nicaragua.
Well, the engineers we've spoken to, it wasn't 10 times larger area.
It just made the signal stronger
right
in the area in which it served. You just had this behemoth covering, what, 38 states? Mm-hmm. That was their effective range at that time.
Mark Magistrelli and Mike Martini are co-hosts of the radio program The Big Broadcast on NPR member station WVXU in Cincinnati. Their collector's edition album is titled Cincinnati Radio, The Nation's Station, 1921 to 1941. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.
Very interesting article about Cincinnati radio, an old radio, huh? Yeah, I like that. A couple people have commented. Apparently there's been some buzz on some computer bulletin boards about the broadcast ownership rules. And basically they're concerned about some of the misinformation which has been going around. Let me set the record straight here. As part of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, Congress mandated that the Federal Communications Commission review its broadcast ownership rules to determine whether such rules are necessary. Now, there's six rules, and those rules are the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership prohibition, the local radio ownership rule, the national TV ownership rule, the local TV multiple ownership rule, the radio TV cross-ownership restriction, and dual television network rule. Now, the only rule that seems to be a problem to a lot of DX Audio Service members is the local radio ownership rule. Now, let me read you from the Commission's own words what that rule is. Initially, the Commission's rules prohibited common ownership of the same service radio stations, AM or FM, that serve substantially in the same area. Currently, the FCC's local radio ownership rule provides the following limitations. 1. In a radio market with 45 or more commercial radio stations, a party may own, operate, or control up to 8 commercial radio stations, not more than 5 of which are the same service, AM or FM. 2. In a radio market with between 30 and 45 commercial radio stations, a party may own, operate, or control up to 7 commercial radio stations, not more than 4 of which are in the same service, AM or FM. 3. In a market between 15 and 29 commercial radio stations, a party may own, operate, or control up to 6 commercial radio stations, not more of 4 of which can be in the same service. And number 4. In a market with 14 or fewer commercial radio stations, a party may own, operate, or control up to 5 commercial radio stations, not more than 3 of which can be in the same service, AM or FM, except that a party may not own, operate, or control more than 50% of the stations in that market. That's the rule. And if you would like to comment on it, I urge you not to call me and complain to me about it, because I can really do nothing more than just copy down your comment and send it into the Federal Communications Commission. What you need to do, if you would like to comment on it, is contact the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. And rather than give out a whole bunch of information here on how to do it, if you would like to do it, just give me a call and I'll explain the process. It's real easy to do. If you are completely without sight and you have no way to actually put together a letter, I'm sure that I can explain to you how a reader can do it for you. There's many different ways, and if you have a computer, you can even do it online. So, anyway, I hope that clears up a lot of the misconceptions that folks have been having. I'm not sure exactly where this information is emanating from, but hopefully we set the record straight. That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We're just about ready to take off in this King Air and head back toward Allen County to put together the DX Audio Service and get it mailed out, which, by the way, this tape will be mailed just around the 1st of August from somewhere in Ohio. We're going to do our Western mailing in the next issue, the September issue. Don't forget, the convention is coming up, and on our next edition, I clear out the studio. Can you believe that? I'll have a complete list for you and a lot more. So we'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio. Now, let's go.
We're going to 180-606.
Indy Delta 463 with you, leveling 240.
1,000 temperature, C12.